Our next speaker is our guest here, and inshallah, by the will of God, we will treat her as God Himself has taught us to treat our guests, with the warmest of welcomes and love, prayers, and blessings. Ms. Allison Weir is the executive director of If Americans Knew. She is the president of the Council for the National Interest, as well as the executive director of If Americans Knew, a nonprofit organization she founded following an independent investigation as a freelance journalist at the height of the Second Intifada in 2001, the flashpoints in the West Bank and Gaza that were rarely being visited by Western journalists. Allison writes and speaks widely. Her articles have been included in a number of anthologies. She is a contributor to Counterpunch, The Link, The Washington Report for Middle Eastern Affairs, and other publications. She has given two briefings on Capitol Hill, has spoken several times at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C., and has been invited four times to speak at the Asia Media Summit in Kuala Lumpur and Beijing, and has also lectured at Harvard Law School, Yale, Stanford, Berkeley, the Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy, the Naval Postgraduate Institute, Georgetown, and numerous other campuses, World Affairs Councils, and numerous other venues. Former U.S. Congressman Tom Campbell has said, Ms. Weir presents a powerful, well-documented view of the Middle East today. She's intelligent, careful, and critical. American policymakers would benefit greatly from hearing her firsthand observations and attempting to answer the questions she poses. In 2004, Allison was inducted into honorary membership of Phi Alpha Literary Society, founded in 1845 at Illinois College. The award cited her as a courageous journalist, lecturer on behalf of human rights, the first woman to receive an honorary membership in Phi Alpha history. I'd like us to welcome her with the loudest of salawat ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
Thank you so much. I'm honored to be with you today. Hope I do the microphone right. I'm so pleased to be here because, as the previous speaker said, this is a cause of justice for all human beings. All of us have a shared responsibility and moral obligation to support our fellow human beings when they are oppressed, when they are in need. And that's why we're all here today, because of what is happening to the Palestinian population and has gone on for over 60 years. We're here to speak about that, to stop that, to bring human rights and justice to Palestinians, as should be brought to all human beings of every race, of every nationality, of every religion around the world. I think I'm here as an example of what you can do here in the United States. You can reach people like me with the facts, and we together can then change the American policies that are so misguided, that are causing such tragedy throughout the Middle East when we join together. 16 years ago, I knew almost nothing about Palestine, like most Americans. My background is Christian. I was the editor of a very small newspaper in Northern California, a weekly newspaper, writing about the city council, the school district, the fishing fleet. The Middle East seemed distant, confusing, and irrelevant to my daily life. So like most Americans, like Americans driving by right now, I would skim the headlines on this issue, accept the confusion that I found, and then I just move on. We're all very busy. We're trying to raise our children and earn a living, and there are many important issues. So I knew nothing about it, like most of your neighbors here. But then in fall of 2000, the Palestinians had an uprising called the Second Intifada. Intifada, as you know, but most Americans don't know, just means uprising, shaking off of oppression. And that was in the news for a while. So I decided to pay attention. I wanted to learn what Israel-Palestine was about. So I thought, I'll just follow the news coverage on this issue. And when I did that so late in my life, when I paid attention, as a journalist, I very quickly noticed that it was very one-sided coverage. I noticed that we heard from and about Israelis in great detail, as I wanted. But then I expected also to hear from and about Palestinians in equivalent details, and I didn't. That part was usually left out, and I, like most Americans, want the whole story of this issue, and I realized I was not getting it. So I went to the internet back in early 2001. It was new to do that. And I typed in some search terms to see what I could learn on the internet. And I discovered that there were excellent news sources from the region itself. Israeli media, Palestinian media that are quite excellent, a number of human rights organizations there on the ground, sending out reports daily about what was going on in early 2001 during that uprising. And I began to read those, and I was shocked at what I learned. I learned that Israeli forces were killing largely unarmed demonstrators in large numbers, men, women, and children, many children, every day. And then I read so much, I learned so much that was deeply troubling. One of the things I remember reading in an Israeli newspaper by an Israeli academic was that the strategy that the Israeli government and the Israeli military were using was to not kill too many people. They were killing a lot, but apparently they decided they would not kill too many because if they killed too many, maybe the world would notice and maybe someone would stop it. So instead of killing too many, they injured multitudes because that would be off the radar. Nobody would learn about the number of people injured every day. They injured, according to this Israeli news report, 6,000 men, women, and children were injured in the first month alone. And also in that Israeli news report, they stated that Israeli soldiers were specifically targeting knees and eyes. With that kind of information, I began to think this was perhaps the most covered up issue I had ever seen in my life. That was going on and I didn't know it. And most Americans had no idea it was happening. And then I learned something else. I learned that my government sends a massive amount of my tax money to Israel every year. That it is currently over $10 million per day of our tax money that goes to Israel. Over $10 million per day. We have given to the tiny country of Israel far more of our tax money than we have given any other country on earth. In fact, we have given to Israel far more of our tax money than to all the starving countries in Africa put together. And you can add in Central America and South America, and it's still more to Israel. In fact, on average, per capita, the U.S. government gives Israelis 7,000 times more than to other people around the world. This makes us, as American citizens, responsible for what Israel does. And yet most Americans don't know that. We think this is a distant conflict, it has nothing to do with us, we're not involved in it. But our tax money is fueling Israeli violations of human rights. So when I learned all of that 16 years ago, and I realized how important this was for the Middle East, for my own country as well, I decided I needed to go and see for myself if what I was starting to learn could be as bad as I began to think that it was. So I quit my job in California, and I traveled over to the West Bank and Gaza as a freelance reporter. This was the most unusual trip I had ever undertaken. Many years before, I had been in the Peace Corps in Afghanistan. In this case, I was going to be traveling alone, and I had no organization guiding or helping me whatsoever. When I landed on February 7th, I believe it was, 2001, I wondered what it would be like for me as a single female American, Christian American, to wander alone through a largely Muslim land that was in the middle of a violent uprising, and that was at the epicenter of a region that Americans are always told is hostile to Americans and to women. That's what we're always told, that what is it going to be like for me to travel around here by myself? What I discovered was that those are myths that are as untrue as they are widely believed. I was treated with respect. I was completely safe. When I went through Gaza and the West Bank, people invited me to stay in their homes. I stayed with their families. I visited their schools, their elementary schools, their colleges. I attended classes at Islamic University in Gaza. And I found that it was a welcoming population, that of course they loved their children as I love mine. But I also saw what was being done to them in early 2001. This is before any rockets had been fired. Americans always hear about rockets from Gaza. Well, I was there before the rockets had been fired, and I saw entire neighborhoods in Gaza that were completely bullet riddled. Many, many homes with huge holes in the roof through the walls. People had to abandon their homes. Some people had mattresses in the center where they hoped they wouldn't be killed with their children. Entire neighborhoods were riddled. There were ruins of buildings that made me think of pictures I'd seen of World War II in Europe. So I saw the oppression and violation of Palestinian lives and human rights that was being done to their children. And when I came back, I decided I needed to tell all Americans about what our tax money is doing, what Israel is doing, and our obligation to stop it. I started an organization called If Americans Knew, because I feel that nobody in this country would support what I saw if they knew what was going on. It's a journalistic, nonpartisan organization to tell people the facts, because if we tell people the facts about this issue, they will then do what I've done. They will say that this is wrong and that we must stop it. So it's our obligation. It's our obligation here to share this information, to tell people what's going on. Here we have a situation where the United States is suffering financially. Many Americans don't have enough money. Many veterans don't have adequate health care from the U.S. government. Many schools are crowded. I believe the schools in Detroit, I was reading some of the situation here. Let me get some of these facts. Detroit filed Chapter 9 bankruptcy, has a debt estimated about $18 to $20 billion. As the whole nation is learning about the water crisis in Flint, that taking care of that will cost at least $750 million, perhaps as high as $1.5 billion Flint needs. The Detroit Public School District has an operating deficit of $515 million. So why are we sending Israel $10 million per day of our tax money? And now with Netanyahu is demanding that it go up, that's not enough. That's not enough. They now want it to go up to $5 billion a year, which means that comes out to approximately $14 million per day of hard-pressed American taxpayers. On top of that, this money that goes to Israel every year goes in a lump sum at the beginning of the fiscal year. No Americans know this. I had no idea about this. But it's in the Congressional Research Service report. These are official American government numbers and facts. At the beginning of the fiscal year, the U.S. government transfers to the Israeli government the whole over $3 billion. It's something like $3.5 billion. It's immediately transferred to Israel. Since the U.S. is operating at a deficit, that means that the money is borrowed. And then it's given to Israel. So then we have to pay additional interest on the money that went to Israel that we don't have anymore. So we pay additional money on top of that, that $10 million per day. Now, what does Israel do? Does Israel spend the whole, $3.5 billion at the beginning of the fiscal year? Of course not. It goes into an interest-bearing account in the New York Federal Reserve Bank. And this is in the congressional report. It goes into an interest-bearing account, so they make interest, which means they take even more money away from the American economy. So it's costing us far more than that. On top of that, people raising money for Israel, for Israeli soldiers even, for example, can write that off their taxes here in the United States. It's a tax deduction. Tax deductions are supposed to mean, well, you did something for the society. Perhaps you donated to the library. Perhaps you did something for your local school district that benefited the economy, the American society. So therefore, that's subtracted from your tax obligation. Was your money given to a foreign country that then is misusing that money, is deducted from taxes? That means it's taken away from our economy? No, that's wrong. We also have one of the most powerful lobbies in the United States is called APAC, the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee. Everybody's heard of the NRA. We hear about the oil companies. There are many informed people that have not heard of APAC, even though according to Fortune magazine, APAC is the second most powerful lobbying organization in Washington, D.C. It has an annual budget of something like $50 to $60 million. It there lobbies every congressperson, including Debbie Dingell, your congresswoman, that's there giving them, telling them what to do virtually every day, sometimes writing the very legislation that our congressional members then pass. It's doing this on behalf of a foreign country. Now, it is legal to lobby on behalf of a foreign country, but if you do that, you must register as a foreign lobbyist. That is what is done. That is the system. Those of us that believe in a rule of law, laws should be obeyed. Well, that law is not obeyed by APAC. The Justice Department over the years has sometimes tried to enforce that law against APAC, but it gets quashed by somebody in the system.